Okay, we're starting at the bottom of 9B. We're going to do Daf Yud, Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis tonight. Amar Rav Mona, Chayin Pincha d'Urzaya, small dish of rice, which remains hot even though it's in a klisheni Messiah Lava, that supports his father, Rabbi Yonah. In other words, Rabbi Yonah just finished saying that whether it's a kli rishon or klisheni, it's still ein hayad sholet. This means the hand, the way he's translating here is the hand does not rule, meaning it's too hot. They only made a herchik for kli rishon, not for kli sheni. So he's showing that the small dish of rice. Let's see what it says in the footnote 10. That's nothing. The same thing is about a gluska. It says, Hahim Pincha, the glusa, a small plate of grits. Also, Messiah La'aba, you transfer it from one place to the other. Akadenu, it remains hot. So, this may have something to do with Davar Gush, I'm not sure. But that's a machlokas about Davar Gush, whether there is such a thing as Davar Gush. Interesting to note that the Gra does not hold from Davar Gush. Whether this Gemara is going to play a role in that, I'm not sure, but it sounds like it because he was trans. Let's see, it says here, Rav Mona's observation supports his father's view. Even a secondary vessel normally reaches a degree of heat. That's Yad Soletis Bo. I mean, this is basically all it's saying. It's Yad Soletis Bo, even in a klisheni. Let's keep going. Now we're on Daf Yudam and Aleph. The Mishnah in Shabbos says, if your pot of food is removed from the fire, you cannot place spices on it on Shabbos. In other words, even we're talking about you're putting into a kli rishon that's not al gavei ha'esh. So, ma'alitin tavlan amamata. What's the rule in terms of putting spices in a utensil, and then to pour hot water from a cooking pot above? In other words, this is a classic case of Eroi Klirishin. Okay? So maybe only putting the spices into the pot where there already is, let's say boiling water or boiling broth, whatever. What about pouring the broth from a Klirishin? Rabbi Yonah also Eroi Klirishin. Rabbi Yonah holds it's exactly the same. Eroi Klirishin is just like Klirishin, no difference. Chayal Rabbi Yonah Da, and his proof is from this Mishnah, Hashemishabo, whether you cooked, this is talking about in Zvachim by Kodshim. The meat of a chatos is eaten for a day and a night. The next morning it becomes nicer. And the Torah says that if you have nicer, that's absorbed in a metal pot, you have to have mikur shtifa. You have to have it, has to be, let's say, I think you have to do, you have to boil it, right? Earthenware pots, of course, it doesn't work, and you have to break them. Now, let's see. So we're trying to prove what Rabbi Yonah said. In terms of Eroi Klirishin is just like the Klirishin itself, because it says, by this pot, Echad Shabishabai, whether you cook the meat in the vessel, Echad She'iro, or you poured hot broth into it, in other words, let's say you made some kind of a hot soup from chatas meat, so and you poured that hot soup into a vessel, you see that you'd have to break the vessel with a kli cheres, right? So you see that Eri Klirishin is just like being cooked in the Klirishin. Tamon kli cheres balea. It's not a good comparison. Why? There's a difference. When you're talking about absorption, so then the kli cheres could absorb by having the liquid poured into it. Tavlan in a mesbashlan, but spices don't become cooked. Maybe it takes more to cook something and to make something absorbed. Hazar Rabbi Yosef Rabbanu, he asked a question. Hatani says in the Brisa, Apeklin of Chayshus came. The broth of Achatos is poured into a copper vessel. It also has to have Rikur Shtifa. Is Lachlamein more Klin of Chayshus Balea? Are you going to say a copper vessel absorbs? So he says, what do you mean? It's not absorbing any easier than any other material. So you see that by saying that it's absorbing, so you see that pouring into it is like a cleavation. And the Gemara does not answer this question. So if you would just stop here, you would think, oh, okay, so Rabbi Yossi, let's see, who was it? His name was Rabbi Yaina. Rabbi Yaina. The Gemara is going to continue to refer to this as a machlokes, so Rabbi Yaina and Rabbi Yossi. The Rabbi Yaina holds that your cleavation is like cleavation, and Rabbi Yossi holds it's not. From the way the Gemara stops, it sounds like Rabbi Yaina would be the winner here in terms of this Shakavataya, in which case Eli cleavation would be like cleavation. We don't pass it that way. We pass it that your cleavation is mavashal kadei klipa in Shin Yud Kas in Halacha Shabbos. So it's interesting to use this Gemara as a basis. So what's the pshat? So the bottom he mentions that the BIC didn't even bother answering this question. The question seems to be obvious. So we're just going to just refer you to note 10 to see how Rabbi Yossi would have gotten out of this question. Malharis im hakiluach. What about pouring spices into the stream of broth falling from the primary vessel? So the Gemara wants to say what? Whether the one who rules leniently regarding broth poured from a primary vessel onto spices rules leniently even regarding the steam of hot broth while it's still in the air. Okay, that's not the way the Hebrew had this. I'm doing the English here for ease of narrative. But over Yom Tov, I was using the Hebrew edition. I don't remember seeing this at all. Let's take a look at the variant A. Goodness, this doesn't look familiar. Okay, according to our elucidation, the Gemara's inquiry is whether the one who rules leniently regarding a primary vessel poured onto spices, meaning Rabbi Yossi, whether he would rule leniently regarding the stream of hot broth while it is still in the air as well. In other words, maybe it's only once it hits the kli sheni that cools it down, but while it's still in midair, it could be boiling hot. Mar Fulda, however, understands that Gemara is addressing the view that considers the broth poured from the primary vessel capable of cooking like the primary vessel itself, meaning it's going like Rabbi Yaina. Gemara is asking if this is true, even if there's a considerable distance between the source and primary vessel and the pot. So that would be a question. In other words, this would be a question, according to Rabbi Yaina, whether there's a difference, whether it's far away. So the Gemara says like this. Amar Panina Braid Rab Hillel. Machlekes Rabbi Yaina Rabbi Yossi. This is also a subject of dispute. According to Rabbi Yaina, it's also according to Rabbi Yossi, it is mutter. I seem to recall the pshat in this when the Hebrew edition was completely different. I think the Hebrew edition said that the pshat in this question was if you like drip it very, very, very slowly, you don't pour it onto the spices, you just drip it very, very lightly. Maybe then it wouldn't be like an eroi. And the Gemara is saying it's still a machlokes. Okay, whatever the pshat is, let's go right there. Rabbi Yisrael bar Gufta boy kumi Rab Mone. Also came to Shabbos. If you did it on Shabbos, you poured onto spices. Chaim Shem Avashal. Is this, in other words, is this a eroi cleavation like a din deraisa? Also came a boss of a halav. Chaim Shem Avashal. We'd be over on Lis Avashal Dibi Chalivim Mo. If you did eroi onto milk and meat together, right? So, is it only this and drop on him? That's the question of Malay. Kadam Rab Zera, Chalut Barer, what is absolute scalding? Is it Chalut Barer? What's absolute scalding? What is this question relating to? This is regarding Chala. So you're only obligated to separate challah from dough if it's baked. If it's scalded in hot water, which is kind of like the way bagels are originally made, that you boil the dough in boiling hot water, that's not subject to challah, even if it's baked afterwards. So, whenever the fire is going beneath it, the chah here too, we could say zeh tashal barer, when it's absolute cooking, kol shah or mahalach tachtov, when the fire is going beneath it. So something poured from a primary vessel does not have the capacity to cook according to deraisa. In other words, he's saying it's not a din deraisa, it's a din drabanan. That's what it seems to say. Let's see here. It says over here in the brackets in 17, according to the conclusion of the Yerushalmi, on the deraisa level can only take place when it is on the fire. Once it's removed from the fire, you're not chayav for cooking if you put raw food in the primary vessel. And certainly not Eroi. Okay. Yeah. I just looked on in the what do you call it? Earlier today I looked in the Shulchan Aruch Rav, Siman Shin Yud Kes, about putting in meat. Let's suppose you have a pan that you just took out of the oven, and it's got boiling gravy in there, and you have some cold meat from the refrigerator. Can you put it into that keli? It's a kli rishon. So he doesn't allow it unless it's like with the evidence, if it's really completely dry. But if it's got any kind of moisture on it at all, he's concerned that you're going to end up being mavashal the moisture surrounding the meat. As far as salt is concerned, that he says nachal lahachmer, not to put salt in that either. Salt, he says, a little more kuldik, because salt requires bishul rav k'moy basar. In order for it to become cooked, it really requires a lot of cooking. It's like meat, so therefore, by the time that would happen, it will have cooled off. So some people are not so makbid about salt. Again, he says nachal lahachmir. Nowadays, salt may be made from something that's already cooked, say bishul habishul. Different things there. All these halachas to look in Shin Yud Kes to get the details. I'm not going to get into the halacha lemaisa in here, but this is all part of this sugya, where the Gemara seems to say that if the fire is not underneath it, it's not a din deraisa, it's only a din drabanan. Al daita Rabbi Yehuda melach b'tzkitzir yayin k'chaymetz. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, as long as it doesn't have, you can put oil into anything as long as it has, it doesn't have vinegar or fish brine. Where it says that salt is like fish brine and wine is like vinegar. If it contains any of those two materials, it's also usur. On to the next Mishnah, Halacha 5. A round cake of pressed figs for the time you glaze it. Okay, so now we're going to just speak this out over here. After being sun-dried, this is footnote 20, the figs were commonly pressed together into the shape of a round cake. And then 21, it was common to glaze the cake of figs by applying a liquid to its surface. This was done by rubbing figs or grapes against the surface of the cake, so the juice oozed out directly onto it, gives it a certain shine, and that's considered the final stage of processing of these figs. The Rambam has a different understanding. He holds you're not glazing it with some other substance, but you're actually just polishing it by smoothing its surface with a stone or a piece of marble. According to Rambam, this is the act of the Gemara Melacha generating a tithing obligation. Okay. So now we're trying to decide when is a Gemara Melacha. In other words, Gemara Melacha means that you can no longer eat it, achilas keva. What about Oculus RI? Let's see, what do we say again? Oh, I'm a little mixed up here. Make sure I got this right. We'll come back to that. Anyway, her ego is Shackley Kennel. So round cake, one a figs, one the time you glaze it, that's considered Gemara Malacha. Machalikin b'te'enu v'anof v'nishal tevel. You can glaze a cake of figs with the juice of figs or grapes that are tevel. So this is a very big kiddush. Here you have a food, meaning your cake of figs, and you're going to be sprinkling liquid from something which is tevel, which you're going to consume. When you go ahead and you eat this, you're going to be eating that tevel. And the Mishnah is allowing it, which is going to be a big question. And we're going to see in the Gemara soon why it would be allowed. If you know, Iser heals is not allowed to do it. So the basic machlokes here is this liquid considered food? Okay. So, what does he say here? In our case, the juice that emerges from the figs or grapes, though edible, it's not classified as food in and of itself because it's absorbed directly into the cake and never existed as an independent entity. So it's insignificant to be called food. It's not subject to the key of the Isurim of Tevel. This is very, very similar to a halacha, famous halacha by squeezing lemons into a tea. So if anybody ever learned Hilchos Shabbos, they know you're not allowed to take a lemon and squeeze it into the tea. What do they allow you to do? They allow you to squeeze the lemon juice into a teaspoon of sugar. So the lemon juice goes from the lemon into the sugar. So it goes from an eichel into another eichel. It never establishes itself as a mashke, and therefore it's mutter, it's not considered schita. That's the din. Everybody knows that din Hilchos Shabbos. So here too, it's very, very similar. You're going ahead and you're squeezing grapes, which are tevel, but they don't ever end up existing as a liquid by themselves. They immediately get absorbed by the figs, so it never establishes itself as an eichel. That might have something to do with it. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Iseri doesn't allow it. He holds the juice of tevel figs is considered significant even when it is immediately absorbed, and you cannot do that. Okay, next daf, Yud Amud Beis. Next Amud, I should say. Machalik Banovim. Now, so that was Machalikus number one. Machalikus number two, if you glaze a cake of figs with grapes, Lo Hochshar, the cake is not rendered susceptible to Tumah. Obviously, if you hold that it's mutter because it's not considered a mashka, so it won't be machshari for tumah either. If you don't know hochshar, he holds it's lishitase, right? Exactly the same thing. Just like he holds that it's a liquid, that it's choshev, that you can't eat it until you masaken it. So too, it has a halacha to be machshar. Ugrogis mishiyadush. Now let's go back to the original discussion about when something is completely processed. It's when you press them into a barrel. So let's see what it says here about the barrel. Loose, sun-dried figs, stored in barrels, are processed, they're considered completely processed, once they've been packed into the barrel with sticks. Okay? So, some explain plum figs are suitable for pressing into cakes, leaner ones into barrels. Whatever it is, the point is that the Gemara Malacha of these figs are when they are packed into the barrel, not when they're pressed into a circle and glazed. This is different. This is a different type. So, Magor Mishriyago, dried figs in a storeroom, are completely processed when one smoothes them. Chaydash B'chavis Ma'agav Magura, if you're pressing them into a barrel, smoothing them in a storeroom, if the barrel broke or the storeroom became damaged, so some of the figs may fall out. You can't eat those those figs that were already in the barrel in the storeroom, even derech arai, because the pshat is, once they reach the stage of gemar melacha, which forbade you at that stage, once it became gemar melacha, that made it so you can't even eat it derech arai, right? Okay, so that's what I was trying to get clear before, but now it's coming back to me. You can't eat derech kfiyos even before it becomes gemar melacha. But derech arai, you can before the gemar melacha. Once it reaches gemar melacha, you can't even do derech arai. Now here you have something which reached gemar melacha, but then the thing broke open and they went all over the floor. So now do they lose their original status of gemar melacha or not? So the Mishnah is saying, Tamakama holds, yeah, it retains its original status of gemar melacha, so you can't eat it arai. And Rabbi Yossi Manti, no, Rabbi Yossi holds no, that they revert. Okay? In his opinion, it's not complete until all the figs are placed in the barrel. Okay, so, in other words, even though you have some packed in at the bottom of the barrel, but he holds, you have to have the whole barrel packed for it to be considered gemar melacha. Okay. So, the same machlokes, he points out, would be true even if you don't have a broken barrel. If I put it into the bottom of the barrel and I decide to take it out of the bottom of the barrel with my hands and then start to eat it, it would be the same machlokes. Couldn't tell how it already reached gemar melacha. Couldn't be actually more because it hasn't reached gemar melacha until the whole barrel is filled. So you don't need broken barrels per se, the way we're explaining this machlokes. The Gemara says, Hananya braid the Rav Yasa Amar. What is a machlekes? The tevel shenipol b'divrehem. This is talking about rabbanon tevel. That's the only time the chacham will make so much to allow you to squeeze grapes and make a glaze over them, because the whole chi of maestros to begin with was rabbanon. But if it would be tevel which was nippled by Torah, if rabbanon mighty, then even rabbanon would agree that the juice of such produce is taka asra. Yeah, footnote 11 should be seen. The Gemara associates the dispute of our Mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda with another machlekes. Ramona Malay Stam. Ram Ovin Amar Meshem Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yehuda Kedate. So Rabbanon Kedatoyim, they said that Rabbi Yehuda is according to his opinion elsewhere, and the Rabbanon also Lashitos on the Tony. There's a price that says like this: Zayas Shapitzai Biyadayim Mesuavais. What are we talking about? We're talking about. Let's see here. It says over here that there's a Gzeiro on your Stam Yadayim, that they have a din of a sheni, and they will contaminate any truma or kachem if they come in contact with it. The truma of the hands and the accompanying ability to invalidate truma can be removed by washing your hands with water poured from a vessel, while the ability to invalidate kachem can be removed by dipping your hands in a mikvah. Hands that have neither been rinsed or immersed are tummy by Midrabbanan and will indeed contaminate Truma and Kachem. Second of all, if they touch any liquid, then that liquid becomes tummy to the degree of a Rishon. So that liquid will in turn contaminate any other food or beverage which it comes into contact with. In other words, Rishon means they'll make a Sheni, which means that even if it's not Truma or Kachem. Okay. So that's the general introduction over there in footnote 15. So now, what does it say over here? If you have olives that one split open, let's see, the olives are split open to soften them. Okay, so this is like, you know, a way to expose the inside of the olive to the air, which will obviously cause it to ripen a little bit and cause it to be sweeter. So if you have these olives that you did, that you split open with unclean hands, it means you haven't washed them, you haven't dipped them in the mikveh, you haven't washed them with a keli, and then fluid comes out of the zayas in the process, they don't become hosher for tumah. And the reason why is very simple, because I think it's because it has to be lertono, right? It has to be. The only time we say that the mayim is kiyutan, it says in the pasuk, right? We've mentioned this many times. So this is not necessarily lertono. So that's what it says over here, lohoshu. L'soifka memelach. But if you are splitting them in order to roll them in salt, so obviously if you want the salt to stick to the olive, it's going to have to be a little bit wet. So that is letzono, hukshru, then they become hukshar. Finally, leidem yeshbo mayim, if you're doing it to know whether there's any fluid in them, lo hukshru, that's not sasatav or buda, amar hukshru, no, in that case, or it's to see if they have water, it is hokshar. So the machlokes is here in the last case. So what does he say here? Yeah. So now, Rabban Amri b'meimav hu boideik. The rabbi say, the Tanakhama says, you split open an olive, is merely examining its secretions, which do not render food to santam of the tumah. B'meimav hu boideik. You're interested only in examining the sap-like fluid of the olive to determine if the crop is ready to be picked. When the fluid oozes out, it does not render the olive susceptible to tumma because that secretion is not oil. It's only juice of the unripe olive. The fruit juices are not among the beverages that make tumma. You have to have shemen. Although olive oil itself is one of the beverages, the farmer is not content. It's not letzono for any oil to come out. So whatever oil does come out is going to be not letzono. Rabbi Huda Amar Begufay Hu Boideik. The exam is the olive itself means it's oil and the fluid that oozes out is therefore does make it tome. In other words, the issue is, How do you view this test? Is this test going to have an impact? Is this test not an impact? That's the wrong word. I'm not looking for. I have to shut off this thing. It's making too much noise. Give me 1 second. Let me shut this off. Okay, that should be better. All right. Now, so what are we saying? We're saying you want to know, you're testing it. The issue is, what is the test? What's the manifestation of the test? Rabbanu hold that it's a kind of liquid, not the oil, but a type of liquid, which is the result of the test. That's all I need to come out of the olive. Anything else is not like. So I think Rabbi Yehuda knows it's the oil itself. Okay, Rabban Amar Memeimav Hu Boideik, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Begufay Hu Boideik. V'hacha, now here, regarding the fluids that emerge from grapes or figs that you use to glaze a fig cake, so Rabban Amar Memeimav Hu Machalik. You're glazing the cake with the secretions of the grape or fig, which are not part of the guf hadavar, that's also part of the mayim. And Rabbi Huda Amar b'sheyesh shalom machlik, he's glazing it with the essence of the fig. So therefore, that will take a render it tamei. With this, we finish Daf Yud.